This is Warbird Radio.
Hey y'all, Tuck Carlson here, introducing my new video series, Tuck Carlson's How to Be a Warbird Pilot. I don't care what you fly. Warbird pilots are the coolest, and I can teach you how to be one. Best part is, you don't even need a plane. Hell, you don't even need to know what a Warbird is just by my video. Inside, you'll learn all the important stuff, like how to fit a flight suit around a beer belly, and why that beer belly is a safety feature. How to ignore small children at air shows. Ain't got time for that. How to grow your ego and sign unreadable autographs. Plus, you'll learn why freedom's the greatest answer to any question. Hey, Tuck, why do you fly these awesome airplanes? For freedom? Or when your wife finds out how much you've spent? Damn it, Tuck. Why'd you spend $6,000 on Avgas? For freedom. So for freedom's sake, buy my video. Before long, people be thinking you're somebody. You'll be sitting around campfires with real women, signing autographs, and petting pretty little baby bald eagles that you grew in redwood trees that you planted beside your hangar. Be awesome, love freedom, and get your copy of Tuck Carlson's How to Be a Warbird Pilot right now. Hey, y'all, hurry, and I'll toss in a special bonus pack. Tuck Carlson's How to Look Good in Short Shorts Late at Night and in the Pilot Briefing. Trust me, short shorts are the coolest things ever. Call now!
Supporting bees the old-fashioned way. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in. Take off.
Well, good evening, everybody. Thanks for bearing with us here for the few minutes. We had a snowstorm last night, and stuff is just, it's not wanting to wake up properly. But we're here. We're live with you. Phone lines are open tonight, 478-787-4768 is the number to dial. Listen, I want to thank Aviate Timepieces. They honor both the aircraft and the untold story of the airman. Check out the awesome lineup of Aviate Timepieces by visiting, write this down, avi-8.co.uk. Now that's avi-8.co.uk. Choose there from six popular themes, including the Harrier watch. Now they're all waiting for you again at avi-8.co.uk. I want to thank them for signing up for a few weeks here with us. Aviate Timepieces. Our thanks to them. We're going to go to the phones tonight, again, 478-787-4768, and talk to each and every one of you. It's Safety Month, where we spend about a month talking solely on safety items. And I want to bring in someone that knows this stuff better than anybody, probably, Mr. Joe Edwards, who's an astronaut and a test pilot. Joe, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great, Pat. How are you?
From the comfort of your snowbound home, I'm sure, right? This city goes
actually
nuts.
Actually, I'm down in Houston, Texas today.
Your second home away from home, that's where all the astronauts like to hang out.
Yeah, we're having a pretty good time here. Came down to do a little work and whatnot.
Well, good for you. Well, hey, I'm glad you're able to spend a few minutes with us. Now, you spent some time in Houston there with NASA back in the day, and glad to be back there, I guess, huh? Do you have a favorite restaurant that you used to go to back then that maybe still around? I know there's one in Clear Lake, the Italian place, Clear Lake, that everybody goes to.
Yeah, there are so many good ones. It's hard to pick, but you can pretty much run through the world's cuisine here, over the course of about a month if you go out every night.
Well, it's always fun. I spent a lot of time there in Houston, used to work there, and good friends down there still. All right, let's refocus here to Safety Month. We wanted to have you on to sort of help us get our mind around and get right about safety. It's been a long winter up here in parts of the Northeast, not so much where you and I live in Virginia, but it's been a winter, and a lot of aircraft have been down for maintenance. They're coming out of maintenance. Pilots are coming out of maintenance. Talk to us about how you get your head around this time of year and what you do before you go fly the next time.
Yeah, well, you're right. It hasn't been a very cold winter, the fact is, you don't want to spin the prop on a big radial, anything less than maybe about 40 degrees Fahrenheit. So what I've been doing for the last few weeks actually is, we're just waiting for the weather to consistently warm up. Because I've been going through the inside of the airplane, doing a lot of cleaning, just cleaning off grime and, dirt and what have you. We about twice a year, we get these stink bugs up in northern Virginia. You know, you always find a couple of those. But I use it as an opportunity to look for FOD in the airplane. You know, my airplane is 60 years old. I've owned it for 10 of those 60 years. And, you know, a lot of other people have worked on it besides myself. It's worked all over the country. When it was a, you know, I have a Navy T-28, Bureau number 140035. And so I go through it and I look for little things like maybe little pieces of safety wire or a small washer here or a screw or what have you, which, you know, I rarely find, but occasionally, you know, you just occasionally find some things that that were left, you know, either accidentally or for whatever reason when maintenance was conducted in the past. And I can tell you, you know, to kind of complete that thought is same thing is true about Navy airplanes.
Tell us the story, Joe. I've heard this story around a beer once before, but if you don't mind, divulge why you look for safety wire in small washers.
FOD in the cockpit, right, type of things. Well, I guess it was my last cruise. We were doing the workups from our last cruise about 125 miles off of NAS Oceana in the Atlantic. And we were going through a carrier qualification period for that last set of workups. So just to get everyone back up to speed, get them fully qualified, you know, within the training matrix and what have you. And I had to fly, I don't know, probably six day landings on the ship and probably had to go out and do four night landings that night. And so I was on my, I'd done five in the day. And I was ready for my sixth, and then I'd be called to be able to go fly that night and get my four. And I was pretty low on gas, but I had plenty of gas to do one circuit around the pattern and land. And when I went down the cat stroke, the airplane's controls, you know, the control stick was like it was in concrete, and you know, I couldn't move the stick forward. So fortunately, you know, I was being launched and I required real only aft stick, but I couldn't, you know, properly arrest the nose up pitching moment of the airplane. And so I was, you know, really in a position where since I had no forward stick authority, I really wanted to come back and land, or I really wanted to go ashore and land and not, you know, have to do a landing back on the boat, which really would be pretty dangerous. And so I raised the flaps, raised the gear. There wasn't much of a change in trim when you raise the gear on the F-14, but when you raise the flaps, it's a pretty big trim change requiring a lot of forward stick. And I didn't have, you know, forward stick authority. And so the airplane, when I raised the flaps, the airplane started to do a loop on me. And, you know, I dropped the flaps back down and realized I didn't have enough gas to go back to Oceana, NAS Oceana, with the flaps down. So I had to come up back to the ship and land. And so you can imagine, you know, you come around and you start on your pass to the boat and you literally, you have no way to terminate the approach other than just turn away from the ship and eject. You know, if for some reason the deck went foul or, you know, you weren't on line up and on center line and on glide slope. So, you know, we just brought it back and flew a pretty nice approach down, you know, to a three wire. But all that story, you know, the moral of that story was, you know, what was causing the binding flight controls and what was causing it was a magnetic compass that had been lost in the airplane 6 months prior and had never been found. And, you know, the assumption was made that, you know, someone had taken it or, you know, someone just didn't record that it had been removed from the airplane and, you know, sent the thing flying. We'd been flying for 6 months with this thing rattling around in the fuselage until finally one cat stroke, you know, it traveled back and lodged in the horizontal tail, and which is the reason why, you know, I couldn't move the stick forward.
You seem to have bad luck with F-14s, Joe. I just, you know, radomes coming off.
They all had happy endings.
They all had happy endings back on a back on an aircraft carrier. Nonetheless, I'm listening to you tell the story. And it's as if, you know, the 172 had a bad circuit breaker, but you know it's not. I mean, your controls were jammed, and yet again, you managed to land an F-14 back on the deck of the carrier. I think it's a remarkable story, and I appreciate you sharing it with us. So yeah, go check out the the little things in the cockpit and make sure that they're where they're supposed to be and make sure there's nothing where it shouldn't be. What else do you want to wrap your head around this time of year in addition to FOD in the cockpit and in the rest of the airplane for that matter?
Well, you know, and you know, there are some parts of the country where, you know, they've been flying all winter long, you know, not so much like guys like you and I, you know, up in the mid-Atlantic. But the other thing that I do is, you know, some of the best maintenance I do on the airplane is just clean it. You know, I might find a leak here. You might find, you know, a bit of safety wire that needs to be, you know, reattached or rewired or what have you. I've always said the best maintenance I do on the airplane is just cleaning it and, having the opportunity to look at things and see if there might be an issue or maybe compare it to another airplane if I'm kind of wondering about the configuration or, you know, find that I need a little grease here or a little hydraulic fluid there, or maybe I have, a leak in a, you know, a certain place in an actuator or something like that, and make a decision whether I need to pull it out, replace it, rebuild it, or is it small enough that, you risk, if you were to, say, rebuild it, you risk making the leak even worse.
Right. Well, that's a good point. And, you know, that's not something that I haven't heard before, right? Everybody says, just go clean the airplane, which makes me think that we have a lot of dirty airplanes out there because everybody always says that, right? They said, just go clean your airplane. And, you know,
speaking to you from, you know, near Johnson Space Center, when I was flying the NASA airplanes, you know, those were the best maintained airplanes that I ever flew. And they were also the cleanest. And I don't think that was a coincidence. And I always swore when I was flying those things that if I ever owned an airplane myself, I would keep them at least as clean as NASA kept their airplanes. And I think that was a big contributor to the material condition of those airplanes and to their reliability.
Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And you know, it's always a post-flight ritual for me to go in there and spend a few minutes with the airplane. One, when the oil is hot, it's easier to come off, you know, when you fly it.
Absolutely.
An old gypsy major like I have. I mean, you got to clean the engine after every flight. You know, you fly it more than 5 minutes and it's wrecked. So I like to go in there and kind of look over the engine and stuff. That's good to know. That's great great advice for the folks that have an airplane that doesn't burn any oil. You know, even there's a few warbirds that I can think of that don't burn much oil. But
there must be an airplane out there that doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Maybe a bulldog or something. But, I know there's a few out there. You know, you also, I know that you're at the test pilot school still. You do some contract work with those folks and I'm sure you focus some on the pilot and not just the aircraft. What do you do for yourself, Joe, in preparing for this next season of hopefully some great flying?
We're coming up on that. We're coming up on air show season as well, although, you know, that's really formally started. What I will do is I will make sure that I do a thorough reread and restudy of the emergency procedures of the airplane. You know, I'll study the NATOPS manual, and if we've had a particularly cold winter, you know, where there hasn't been a whole lot of flying at all, you know, for those of us that live in the area that we do, I'll actually go in and give myself a NATOPS test, you know, a test on the POH. And, you know, one of the advantages to having a former Navy airplane is they have an entire question bank in the back of the NATOPS manual in the POH, and you can select from those things. And, you know, the standard in my mind is I really should know the answer to all of those questions, but, you know, you have to refresh your memory occasionally. And I'll go in there sometimes and find something that I'm not absolutely positive that I know, and go reread. And, you know, the NATOPS manual for the T-28 is probably 4 inches thick. So you can always, you know, if you go in there and you read every word, you can always find some things that you, you know, may have forgotten or didn't fully comprehend on your, you know, the first time that you're studying it, you know, before you flew it back from Camarillo, California, after you bought the thing.
Right. Right. Well, it's great advice you're giving tonight. We're talking with astronaut Joe Edwards, who's also the only astronaut airshow pilot in the United States. A great guy, good friend, and really an all-around aviator. a guy that's flown everything from the space shuttle, I'm sorry, the orbiter, Joe, the orbiter, down to the F-14. And you did a lot of the test flying on the last model of the F-14, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. The last two, what turned out to be called the F-14 Bravo and the F-14 Delta. And also, to put a plug in for you here, which is entirely warranted, the best air shows that are fly are the ones where you are announcing.
Oh, come on.
I get the most, yeah. I mean, you know, the announcer is a really big part of it. And, you know, the way that you always put it together when we're working together, you know, the music and the narration, what have you, you know, that's pretty important. And like I say, always get the most comments when you are the announcer for us.
You're very
so
kind.
Appreciate it.
You're very kind. Listen, we have a caller. Let's pause here real quick and take this caller and see who it is tonight. Good evening, caller. You're on the air with Joe Edwards.
How you doing, sir?
Oh, I know who this is. How did you sneak in on this line?
It's the super secret line.
That's right. This is my good friend Robert Janicek, Joe, and Robert is.
Hey,
is
Bob,
down
how
in
are
a,
you?
You know Bob Janicek.
How you doing, Joe?
Oh yeah,
Denim and Monroe.
Yeah, I'm doing great, man.
What's your question tonight, caller? Good evening.
No, and yeah, and amongst the other things I do, I am a space nerd. I'm not sure if you realize that, so. Every time Joe comes to an air show, I love to talk to him about some of the space
programs.
Well,
now hold on just a minute, because Bob is wanted all over the southern states for his acts of vandalism that were really just science experiments going wrong when he was a child, Joe, launching rather large model rockets and setting small forest fires.
Yeah, you need to stay away from those, you know, 1001 chemistry experiments.
I'm telling you. Janicek has done more with model rockets as a kid than most of I think most of Wernher von Braun's experiments could have added up to. This guy is he really was. He gave that what was the movie about Homer Hickam? October Sky.
That was
just rookie level when it came to the Janicek's running around. But anyway, Bob, what's your question tonight? I hope it's a little conspiracy theory mixed in too. But let's see.
No, not too much. One of the interesting things that Joe would always talk about, and I don't know if you remember saying this, that I was asking about his time on the shuttle and the space station. That space had an odd smell to it, and I always thought that was kind of interesting. I know Joe used to say when they'd come in from the airlocks, it had an odd smell, and you'd think space wouldn't have a smell, but I remember him saying that it did have an interesting smell, and I was thought, hey, that's kind of cool, because you don't think about, you always think of space as the weightlessness and everything else, but he always said that being on the shuttle and the space station had an odd odor to it, other than
yeah,
standard that, not showering for a week or two.
We were probably talking about me, or it, you know, just kind of had kind of a musty smell to it, and, you know, after we opened the hatch, after about 24 hours, you know, we'd scrub the atmosphere of both of the vehicles. And then, you know, it'd be nice and sweet, you know, over there.
Wow. Joe, do you, when people come to work on your own home, do you, have you ever used that term? We need to scrub the atmosphere when your HVAC guys come over.
Yeah. Well, I did have a heater replaced this winter, a furnace. So, it seemed to cost about as much as a space shuttle,
yeah, right.
I gotta tell you.
Well, what else do you have, Bob? I know you got something else rattling around in there.
Oh, no, like I said, we're just getting myself and my crew getting ready for the air show season this year. And I know we talked a little bit about some of the safety stuff coming up with the new company. So
we're going to have you on next week, I think. Isn't that right? Yeah, next week, I think.
That's it.
You and
yeah,
Joe
we'll
Sarber.
We'll talk about the new rapid response team we got together for the air show performers.
Joe, are you aware of this, what they're doing? Do you know about this?
I think it's really interesting. You know what? Shoot, Bob, I'll put words in your mouth. But basically, you know, you guys have a crash crew with really professional equipment that's highly trained, you know, specifically for air shows. And the business that you started is to contract with those air shows and be there for all of the performances, and which I think is, you know, is a pretty brilliant idea. From both a safety perspective and a business perspective.
Yeah, and like I say, we came up with the idea because we all have lost friends in the air show industry, and some of them were nothing you could do about, and others, you know, due to certain circumstances, you know, we think they could have been saved. So I always thought that was kind of something we needed to work on, and so that's why we came up with the company, because, you know, Air Show Family is a small group of folks, so we always like to keep them safe and close to our heart and stuff. So that's kind of why we came up with the idea, and, you know, NASCAR has their safety teams, and that's kind of the way we're leaning, so we have our own crews that's familiar with everybody in our aircraft.
I think it's great. Well, and Team Frost, we'll be talking about that next week on Warbird Radio.
All right.
Hey, thanks, Bob. Thanks for calling on.
I appreciate
tonight.
It.
Good to hear your voice. You know, Joe, we should sit
good
around
talk
with
to you, Bob.
We should sit around with him some night and get him to tell some stories of his model rocket days. They were pretty neat with he and his family. I mean, they really did. I think a lot of folks. I don't know about you, but a lot of folks sort of come to this addiction through stories like that, through modeling and through model rockets or whatever it is, from reading and seeing a movie about this. What do you want the folks to know, and what is something that is applicable for the folks that are in that phase, we have a lot of modelers that are listening to this show. What do you think is applicable to them as we talk about safety and safety month? Any advice that an astronaut would want to hand down to someone in that phase?
When I was doing that, you know, we were flying little, Cox single cylinder engines. You know, they're taking a pretty volatile fuel, actually. Probably wasn't real good to get it on your skin or what have you. Now so much of it's electric. You certainly don't want to fly those things into one, but I think a lot of the material handling issues that we probably didn't know about when we were kids, you know,
right,
it's probably been resolved. But, you know, from an airspace engineering point of view, that I think getting involved in that is a great way to lay a foundation for, you know, lifelong, if nothing more, interest and hobby in it. But certainly a foundation of a career if someone so chose to do it. I know I've certainly played with those things. When I was a kid, I crashed more control line airplanes, you know, than I care to remember. Didn't make my parents real happy because I didn't get very many flights out of everyone they got me for my birthday.
It's always fun, isn't it? It was great fun.
Oh, yeah.
I think everybody starts that way.
I guess someone was able to fly those things. I just was never able to do it the way the guys on the cover of the box, you know,
right,
to be able to do it so
right,
professionally.
Right. Well, what great fun. And, I think we all had our share of 049s and all those little engines. And
049.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
Great
things had a great sound, you know. And I can't believe none of us cut a finger off as we're turning that prop.
Well, I had some friends that did that.
Started.
Yeah, I had some friends that did.
Did you really?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, you're in it long enough.
That's a surprise.
And you're like, that's the whole goal is don't put your hand in the prop, you know. That's... Yeah, dangerous
yeah,
stuff. And that's a big, big thing, safety month. And Mike Chilson, our RC guy, will be talking about that here hopefully in another week or two. Joe, while
if we have time, I have a story about Homer Hickam.
If
you don't
let's hear
something else.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he already cut the deal for the movie, but I was down in Huntsville, Alabama at a dinner, and he was the speaker for it. And it was, you know, the word was just getting out that this movie was going to come out. It had already been filmed. And, of course, he'd written a book. It was called Rocket Boys. And it's a pretty successful book. And, you know, he sold the film rights to it. I don't know if he actually wrote the screenplay. But as I recall, the movie is pretty much like the book. And anyway, so he was about to speak, and his phone rang, and he had to take the call. And he comes back about 10 minutes later, and he's absolutely livid. I mean, you know, his face is red. He's obviously very, very angry. And he said, you know, he came, you know, went to the podium, and he said, you know, I'm kind of sorry that I've delayed the event tonight, but I was just on the phone with, you know, whoever in Hollywood. And, you know, I wrote a book called Rocket Boys, and they're going to entitle the movie October Sky. And he goes, how can anyone take a title called Rocket Boys, for goodness sake, and then have such a banal title for the movie as October Sky? And he was not happy about it at all. And I still, for the life of me, you know, because if you know
right,
if anything, in the real world, the book would have been called October Sky, and they would have changed the name to Rocket Boys in Hollywood. You know, and that was kind of Homer Hickam's whole thing. It was pretty funny, but I guess he eventually got over that.
What did you think about rattling around in the halls with some of the greats? I mean, back in the day, you and I have never really talked about this, Joe, but I mean, when you were there, it was really the heyday of the shuttle. I mean, right there in the 90s.
Yeah, all of the guys, and they were all the guys that were our childhood heroes. You know, you just run into them in the hallway and have conversations with them and what have you. The funny thing, though, is I was down here a couple of weeks ago, and I had to have my badge renewed, and I was at security, and the lady that was doing my badge, you know, took my picture, and she said, so what did you do while you were here? Because we have the former astronauts have a special badge. And I said, well, you know, I flew the space shuttle and went to the nearest space station. And she looked at me and said, oh, you were one of the pioneers. And I said, well, I don't think we see it that way. And he said, oh, yes, you were one of the pioneers. And so I don't know. Maybe I should, you know, run the numbers and see how old I am. I feel like I should be, you know, 110 if I'm going to be a pioneer.
Right. I'm thinking, you know, covered wagon. And,
I guess, you know, that it's interesting. I guess maybe that's the way some people are seeing it. Certainly. When you and I are at air shows, Bob's at air shows, I have found it interesting about over the last 5 years, they see things like the F-14 and the space shuttle with a definite historical aspect when that was not the case, you know, in 2005, in 2000, in 1995, it was more of a current event. So, you know, it's just interesting how quickly things age in people's minds, because it hasn't been that long since we've been flying the space shuttle, not to you and I anyway.
Well, and I'm so fascinated still by the space capsule, the idea of a capsule coming back into Earth's atmosphere with a parachute system. I mean, it just seems so archaic to think of the way we did this.
Those things had a lot of titanium in them in a day when, you know, most of the titanium was inside the borders of the Soviet Union. I was actually over at the National Air and Space Museum, Udvar Hazy building at Dulles. You know, you and I are familiar with it because we live around there. And a buddy of mine, Chris Brown, just became the number two guy at the Air and Space Museum working for Jack Daly. Chris just left as the manager of Dulles Airport and managed National Airport before that, Washington National. And anyway, so we were getting a tour back in the storage area, and they had a Mercury spacecraft back there that had never flown. It was a spare. It was in a big box. We kind of, you know, looked at it a bit and actually looked it up. But it was I can't remember which mission it was a spare for, but it's, you know, it's just a brand new vehicle sitting in there in a box. So it's they have a lot of interest.
Isn't that remarkable?
But you're right. They were remarkable vehicles, and you know, they were low lift to drag vehicles like the space shuttle as well. You know, they didn't have wings, but but you know, that's the way that they were designed, you know, based upon some of the concepts that Max Faget came up with.
I think that's one of the greatest places on Earth, by the way, and it's a remarkable place to go tour. The Udvar Hazy, if you're ever up in D.C., go do it. But I'll tell you, Joe, I know you've been on the special tour like I have, and when you get to go on there with a curator or somebody that is tied to the Smithsonian for whatever reason, and you obviously with Warbird Radio, I've had some pretty cool access, but The neat part about that is that storage room, and you can't see it from the observation deck, but behind that big wall on the left is just the most incredible archive you've ever seen, is it not?
It really is. And you know, thinking, you know, of course the articles that are in the museum aren't going to fly yet, but I think some of the most important work that's being done is by people that are continuing to fly the airplanes. And you know, you and I are on a small scale, but we were actually there with the guys from Texas Flying Legends. And those folks, you know, are flying at a quite a bit larger scale, multiple airplanes, fabulously restored and very, very well maintained, very professionally operated. So, you know, it was a pleasure to have those two points of view there. And in fact, there a lot of their some of their maintenance team anyway was there with us that day, and they actually stay in very close contact with the staff at the Air and Space Museum on restoration matters and authenticity.
Isn't that great? Well, and of course, you're right in their backyard this week down there in Houston. I mean, you're right there. You got to go by and See the hangar. I remember when they bought their first airplane. I was there the weekend that it came in, and that what a great museum and great guys.
It really is. And Ellington Field is where they store their airplanes right now. You know, down right where the astronauts fly out of. You know, out of Johnson Space Center. So yeah, I do need to stop by there and say hello to them.
Well, there's so much there. I mean, that's where Larry Gregory and the guys from Galveston are moving. The Lone Star Flight Museum. It's where Texas Flying Legends, they're located. The Collins Foundation is located there. There's just so much to see and do there at Ellington Field. Well, good. Joe, any final thoughts on safety as we continue to talk about Safety Month that we want to drive home to guys before they pull the airplane out, before they get back in the airplane? Anything you want to reiterate or share with
them? Well, I'd say some of the most interesting guys I've ever flown with were guys that, purposefully developed a reputation for being, real scarf in the wind fighter pilot, what have you. But behind the scenes, they were very meticulous aviators, both regards to their proficiency and to their machines, and, held very, very high standards. So, after hours, a little bravado, is not going to hurt anything. In fact, it's probably good for the community, and I certainly enjoy it. But in the end, we don't have the opportunity to do what we do unless we, adequately maintain our airplanes and to a standard that not only enables us to get it out to the public, but makes us proud to own and operate the machine. So that's what I try to do. And the guys that work with me, my volunteers and friends, that help us, and you've personally met many of them. And so we're just getting ready to go as the weather warms up, and we really look forward to seeing everyone out on the airshow circuit this year.
Where are you going to be this year, Joe? Give us the Joe Edwards rundown of shows.
We'll definitely be at Georgetown, Delaware, at Culpeper. We'll be at Dulles. We may be at NAS Norfolk. If they bring us in, they're working on their schedule as well. Let's see. I think that's probably about it. So most of our stuff is in the summer on into the fall.
Yeah. Well, you'll be at Culpeper for sure. Your home show.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Yeah.
Whether they want you to fly or not, you'll be there, Joe. So.
Whether they want me to fly or not, I'll be flying.
That's right. here he goes. Well, I'm planning to be there too. It'll be a lot of fun, and what a great time! And hopefully see you at Pax River the next year too. That'd be great to get to go back there. That was a very enjoyable show. The only thing I missed was I wanted to get the tour of test pilot school from you and Rusty and Larry. I just couldn't get over there. But I mean that's going to be on the bucket list. Not the schoolhouse per se. I want to go see the toy box. That's out behind.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's easy to do. We got really busy that show. That was a great show. Pax River did a really nice job. And we got really busy when the Blue Angels canceled.
Yeah, everything
so
got
we,
really
busy. We sucked up a lot of the after-hours events that those
right.
guys probably would have been at and what have you. And, another great show that we did last year was Cherry Point.
Oh, yeah.
And it'd be great to go back and do that again. That was a bit larger show, just slightly larger perhaps. There were some Collins Foundation airplanes there and what have you, but that was a lot of fun with really good people, and it's always fun to be around the young Marines.
There you go. Well, good stuff, Joe Edwards. Thanks for spending a little bit of time with me tonight and sharing with the audience your thoughts on safety and all the things that go into it. And I think the takeaway is watch for FOD in the cockpit. I mean, that's a big one. And your story about the Gumpus getting lodged in the controls. Boy, I'm telling you that's just another Joe Edwards story for around the round bar when you're in Las Vegas.
Yeah, well, that mag compass is a little bigger than a washer
right.
or a screw.
Right.
But it did its job. Yeah. We eventually found it though. Got to a spot where we could find it. So then we pulled it out of the airplane.
Well, you're the only guy I've ever met that can say that they've landed an F-14 with a fouled elevator control and with a fouled eye and nose cone and canopy as well. So you hold that unique and dubious distinction.
Well, just remember that when you're announcing our next show.
I'm going to try not to scare everybody. We'll just be waiting for something to fall off, you know. We'll be like,
you.
I will say this though: your T28 is so impeccably maintained. You do such a great job of it, and your entire team there, with Tom and all the guys that help take care of that, they just do a great job, and it's a beautiful thing to see. So, get out there and enjoy.
They are a bunch of great guys there. We do work hard to keep not only looking good, but, you know, operating as well as it looks. So we're really looking forward to seeing you at a few shows this year.
All right, Bob. Well, thanks again to Bob Janicek for calling in tonight. And, Joe, thank you for coming on and sharing with us about everything in regards to Safety Month. Joe Edwards, everybody, our astronaut buddy and T-28 pilot, test pilot, all-around great guy. Joe Edwards, thanks again.
Thank you, Matt.
We'll be in touch there, Joe. And I'm looking forward to seeing each and every one of you at the air shows around the country. I wanted to get in a quick plug, though, again, for our new sponsor from AV8 Timepieces, a really great company. AV8 Timepieces honor both the aircraft and the untold story of the airmen. Now, you can check out the awesome lineup of AV8 Timepieces by visiting avi-8.co.uk. Now, that's avi-8.co.uk. Choose from six popular themes, including the Harrier. And all these watches are there waiting for you again at avi-8.co.uk. Big thanks to our friends at avi-8.co.uk, the AV8 Timepiece is a whole collection of watches. And if you haven't seen them, log on to the website there and do that. We'll put it in a quick link here in the show story. But I would encourage you to go take a look at that stuff and really find one on there that may suit you. There's a lot of British stuff that's on there, including the Spitfire, the Hurricane. They're all there, so take a look. I couldn't pick just one. I got to tell you that. I had a hard time looking at them all and trying to figure out which one I would want, but couldn't pick them. Let's fast forward a little bit to the next hour of programming here on Warbird Radio. We'll be talking with Dave Homewood, down in New Zealand, and Dave standing by now with the preview, I believe. Good evening, Dave. How are you?
G'day, mate. How are you?
I'm great. It's a beautiful evening here in the nation's capital. What's coming up tonight with Mr. McSweeney on your show?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a beautiful afternoon here, and we've got Paul McSweeney on from Pioneer Aero Limited at Ardmore. They're one of New Zealand's and perhaps the world's best warbird restoration workshops. They've put out several P-40s in the past, and they've got four P-40 projects at the moment, a P-39. They've got a couple of Kingfishers, the float plane Kingfisher things, and they've got some Japanese aircraft as well, a couple of Tony projects that are coming to New Zealand soon for them to finish at least one of them, and they're working on a Kate, which is now at the Pearl Harbor Museum in Hawaii. Paul's going to talk all about those and a few other things he's been working on.
Now, how much of this stuff is planning to be flown again, Dave, or is it just going to be restored?
I think everything except the Kate.
Everything except the Kate. No kidding.
I believe so, yeah. Paul will be able to confirm that, but definitely the P-40s, the P-39, I believe the Tonys will fly again. I think everything except the Kate will be flyable. And so that's a lot of airworthy projects for a small company, but it's really great to see.
We're looking forward to that again at 9 o'clock tonight, about 20 plus minutes or so. I have Dave and Grant. I understand Grant last minute can't make it. We'll blame it on the Northeast.
He was going to be on the show, and then he got a message from somebody at his work, because he's at work, of course, and he can't make it. He's got a meeting that's just suddenly come up. So he said to say hi to you, Matt, and to all the listeners, but he regrets he won't be on the show.
We'll blame it on the Nor'easter that struck the East Coast today. And we'll just blame it on that. It was touch and go. I'm telling you what, it was really touch and go. The power's been on and off, and everything's sort of been, believe me, we still have heat, right? So it's not bad. But anyhow, great to hear your voice again, Dave, and I'm looking forward to hearing you at 9 o'clock East Coast here. By the way, Dave, you got to check these watches out, okay? avi-8.co.uk.
Do you know what's funny? I was just listening to your show with Joe Edwards, and the very end there where you were talking about those watches, I was actually on Google when you Skyped me in just then. I was looking at them. So
pretty nice watches.
Yeah, they are.
Which one would you choose? I'd have a hard time. Maybe the Spitfire for me. I don't know. I'd have to look. They don't have a chipmunk. So,
that's a bit of a downfall in range there. Not having a chipmunk watch.
I'm telling you, they got a Harrier watch though. That's pretty cool.
The Spitfire one though, that is pretty awesome.
Oh, it's beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, very nice watches there. Well, okay. Well, we're going to talk to you in a little bit, and hopefully Paul McSweeney will get him connected up here, and everything will go off as we hope.
As we hope.
It's live radio.
You never can tell.
You never can tell. Hey, Dave, thanks for calling in, and we'll be in touch with you real soon.
Cool.
Thanks again. Dave Holmwood, everybody, from the Wings Over New Zealand show, debuting again tonight at 9 o'clock for this month's episode of an all-new Wings Over New Zealand live show. It is Safety Month. We like to talk about safety. We'd love to hear from you tonight. You can call us up at 478-787-4768. If you'd like to get on the phone, we'd love to hear from you. And I think we have a call right now. Good evening, caller. You're on the air. Who is this?
This is Teresa. How are you?
Oh, Miss Teresa. How are you?
I had to call.
How are you tonight?
I'm good, but I heard the New Zealand accent, and I just had to call because I just like it.
You just like the... Well, hang on a minute. Let me see if we can just raise Dave back up. He's in the green room right now. We'll get him back up here.
He's in the green room?
Dave is in
the... I'm green with envy.
We have a green room in New Zealand, and Dave goes there, and it's he's in there right now. Let me see. Dave... Miss Teresa wanted to call and comment upon your accent.
Oh, okay.
See, he's giddy
now. It's quite lovely.
Oh, thank you.
Now he's blushing,
you're
Teresa.
You're welcome.
You want to sing
him? I figure I'm never going to have the chance to go there, so I'll just listen to the accent anytime I can.
What would a song about New Zealand be that you would want to sing, Teresa? What would a good New Zealand song sound like?
It'd be something from Lord of the Rings, probably, because that's the extent of my of my experience.
Something from Lord of the Rings. Really? You worldly American.
Something hobbit-like or elf-ful.
You know, Lord of the Rings is what New Zealand's known for these days, but it has a great connection because, of course, it was directed by Sir Peter Jackson, who owns that amazing collection of World War I aircraft, the Vintage Aviator Limited. So, you know, that's a good connection. Oh. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. I was thinking you were going to
sing Dave.
I
didn't realize he had airplanes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's got the biggest collection of flyable World War I aircraft in the world. So, yeah, he runs a few air shows down here, or his company does, and they export aircraft around the world as well. They've got a factory called the Vintage Aviator Limited, which produces exact replica World War I aircraft, and you'll see the likes of Kermit Weeks flying them, and there's a few in England with Shuttleworth and places like that were built here in New Zealand. But they're absolutely identical, exact replicas, even down to they've built new engines exactly like they were 100 years ago.
Wow.
Now, listen, Teresa, we have a favor to ask of you. Dave's friend, a young guy by the name of Bevan Dews, is going to be at Oshkosh this year.
We need to hook
you and Bevan up so you can help him get the lay of the land, maybe.
He's one of those pilots for the Vintage Aviator.
Some of Peter Jackson's airplanes. See, that's
yeah.
I'm telling you learn some World War I songs. We'll send you south, Teresa, and you can sing down there.
I sing World War I songs at the Military Aviation Museum in Virginia Beach in the fall when they do their World War I show.
Well, maybe,
I wear my wig and everything.
Maybe he's listening now. What would you sing? We can't get her to sing, Dave. We've got to try to get her to sing. That's the goal here, Holmwood.
I need to butter him up with the golf cart first.
Yeah, well,
and
that's
then
true.
Sing.
All right. All right. Well,
give me a minute. I'm trying to think of my. Let's see. What do I sing from?
You
maybe
called
like Tootsie Tootsie and all that. Yeah.
Yeah.
The problem with World War I songs were they were kind of like group drinking songs. And so.
Well, what's wrong with that,
Teresa?
What's
wrong with that?
What's wrong with that?
Nothing, but there's not a lot of skill required, like with some of, you know, like think about 99 bottles of beer on the wall.
Right.
it's somewhat repetitive. If you get it right the first time, your chances of finishing it up are pretty good.
That's true. That's true. I like it.
But do you know what song is actually World War One, but it carried into World War Two because it was a Fred Astaire song, was Blue Skies.
Oh, yeah, Blue Sky. Calling at me.
Blue sky, smiling at me, nothing but blue sky. Do I see?
That's right.
Falls into safety months because you really don't want to fly if you don't see blue skies in a World War One.
Oh, look at you. Look at you, sweet tea.
Segway.
I love it. All right. Hey, thanks for the call tonight. And I'm glad you called in. I was feeling like you didn't love us anymore. You didn't want to call in. Hey, by the way, keep Janáček away from the model rockets, will you?
He'll blow his hands off.
He'll blow something off.
Something.
All right, Teresa.
I will. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, you got to go find Bevan Dews on Facebook and link up with him, okay? He's the young pilot from New Zealand, and we want to show him a good time at Oshkosh this year. I mean, we really do. We want to put him on the golf cart, ride him around.
I can do that.
Take him in and let him meet Bud Anderson and all the guys, and you know, really, really give him the experience this year. He's got to go to Ultralights with us one night.
And you've got to sing a duet with him as well too on the golf cart. That'd be great.
Oh, she'll do that.
We can do that. And you know what? I go live on Facebook, so you can watch for that, and it will show up to everyone's mortification.
There you go.
Awesome.
All right, Teresa. Thanks for calling in. Good to hear your voice.
Thanks,
Teresa. All right, take care. Good night.
So, see, Dave, they just want to call up and talk to you. These women.
Isn't it amazing? They don't do that on my show.
I love it. See, I think it's great. All right. Well, we're gonna hopefully have a great Oshkosh for Bevan Dews this year. And hopefully he won't cancel at the last minute. Dave maybe can travel along with him in the baggage hold or something. Hold on to the landing gear.
I wish. I don't think I'll be there this year, but one day I will get there.
Well, it's going to be a quick one for me this year, but we'll have more on that later. But Dave, hey, great to see you, and we'll see you back in about 8 minutes or so for the start of your show.
Cool, okay.
All right, everybody. Go back to the green room, Dave. Go back and enjoy the peanuts. We'll talk to you real soon. Dave Homewood will be live again in a few more minutes from the Wings Over New Zealand show. But again, a big thank you to our new sponsor, the AV8 Timepieces, folks. AVI-8.co.uk. So AVI-8.co.uk. Really, watch and a timepiece that honors both the aircraft and the untold story of the airman who flew them. Just check them all out. They're all there at avi-8.co.uk. And just visit the website, take a look, find the one for you. And there's six of them right there, the themes, I should say, six popular themes. And they're all just waiting for you to take a look at. There again, avi-8.co.uk. Take a look. You'll be glad you did. And maybe you can send one home to you, courtesy of your favorite credit card or PayPal. They'd love to do that for you. They're also available, I believe. They are available at Nordstrom's. So I'm just checking the notes here. So if you're around the street from Nordstrom's, well, go on over there. You know who is around the street from Nordstrom's? Is a guy that I love, Mr. Jim Crum, who's writing in, and he says, I have a Kent Peach safety story. We all have a Kent Peach safety story. We should have Kent Peach on and talk about Safety Month. We may have to do that. We may have to extend a week and get Mr. Peach on to talk about Safety Month. What a guy. The only guy that I know that can do some of the stuff that he does and make it look that easy or awful, or I don't know what you'd say, but yeah, that easy. Well, if you haven't seen Kent Peach fly, it's sort of a toss-up between awful and easy, but he's an amazing man and can fly that Interstate Cadet like nobody I've ever seen, so check him out on YouTube there. But hey, Jim, good to hear from you. And great to hear from each and every one of you tonight who've written in or who have sent a text or a call. Hey, we're glad to have you on. We look forward to having you back next week as Safety Month continues. Remember the number, 478-787-4768. It's a quick call on Skype from anywhere in the world via Warbird Radio. And you can send us a message. If you're listening to the podcast, we're glad you did. Send us a message. We'll play it on the air next week. You make it a great week, folks. We'll talk to you again at the top of the hour for an all-new Wings Over New Zealand show. Be sure and thank a veteran. And so long for now, everybody. Good night.